First Coast Connect with Melissa Ross is sponsored in part by Baptist Health.
Donna Deegan and Daniel Davis take the debate stage. New revelations about a prominent local man's suicide and more controversy at Duval County Public Schools. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good morning. We're live with you from Studio 2. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, all of the top stories of the week with our Friday roundtable. You can join us. The number, as always, 549-2937. Then later, we'll spotlight the ribbon cutting and opening of the Farmery today, a unique new place in historic Springfield. That and more ahead. But first, it's Friday, and here to round up yet another busy week in the news, we welcome writer and regular contributor Shelton Hall.
Good morning.
Claire Heddles of Jax Today.
Good morning.
Regular contributor and former city council president Jack Webb.
Good morning.
And rounding out our fabulous foursome, Nate Monroe of the Florida Times Union. Hey, Nate. We'll have Nate in a minute.
Hey, Melissa.
Oh, there he is.
Hey, Melissa.
Okay. Everyone, listen live on the radio, or you can watch the video stream right now on Facebook and YouTube. And let's begin with our top story. I kept thinking about that song Mrs. Robinson last night, going to the candidates debate. Yes, they debated last night. Daniel Davis and Donna Deegan took to the stage at UNF to talk about the biggest issues in the Jacksonville mayor's race. Davis stressed his police endorsements and said he would hire hundreds more officers to make Jacksonville safer. He also says he'd be more qualified to negotiate deals with the city than his opponent. Here's what Davis says are his top priorities.
We're going to make your streets safer. We have to make sure that we provide more infrastructure for the citizens as well. I believe in a smaller government and making sure that we take your tax dollars and we get them back out on the street for you, because that's what government's supposed to do. Oftentimes, government loses its way, and they get involved with many things they shouldn't be a part of. And what I'm going to do as your next mayor is to make sure we stay focused on how we spend your money, make sure we put more officers on the street for you, and make sure we spend your hard-working tax dollars back in your neighborhood for the infrastructure that you need.
Donna Deegan also promised to fully fund the police. She hit back at Davis on his accusations that she's less qualified, saying she's created a national nonprofit and has brought new money and attention to the city through her marathon. She also called Davis out on what she called a culture of corruption in Jacksonville, including his involvement in the failed attempt to sell JEA. Here is Donna Deegan on her priorities.
I have come up with a three-pillared plan that I believe will make us a safer, healthier city. First of all, it starts with finally fixing the broken infrastructure, the neglected infrastructure in this city, and keeping the broken promises that we have been making to our neighborhoods in this city for 55 years. We've got to finally fix the drainage. We've got to fix the septic tanks and so much else. The second pillar is health. We have the absolute worst health outcomes for primary health in the state of Florida. I have a four-point plan to deal with that and to bring us back and to create safer, healthier neighborhoods. And finally, we need to rev the engines of small business in this community. We have a plan to bring everybody into this economy instead of just a select few like we do now.
Both of those clips, courtesy of Action News Jax, which televised the debate from UNF. So we begin our Friday roundtable with a discussion of the race and the candidates and the issues. Did you watch the debate? What are your thoughts? Give us a call, 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And, of course, Facebook is open to you always. Let's begin with our former public official, Jack Webb. You know, a lot of people don't watch these debates when they go to vote. They maybe haven't seen the candidates debate, but it was the last chance for Davis and Deegan to be seen together on TV and make their case to the voters. How do you feel they both did?
I think that Donna had a good night. I thought that she was wise to, I know that she has been insistent that she will take the high road and not focus on the negative, but at the same time, I think she was wise to defend herself aggressively against some of the negative attack pieces. And I think that put Daniel back on his heels somewhat. I think when he was asked to address the question, you know, what did this mean? What, you know, Donna nailed it. Said they're trying to make me out as a radical, and that's just ridiculous. Daniel had really not much to come back with in that regard. Although, having said that, by and large, I thought Daniel had a pretty good night. I don't think that he came across as I think he had a better night than he did in the prior debate. I don't know, like you say, who's watching this. I hope a lot of people go back and watch it, you know, watch live stream it, or excuse me, stream it again to the extent that they can, because it was I thought it was interesting. I came away from it saying, all right, a lot of soft promises, a lot of softballs, infrastructure, whatnot, police funding. I was surprised that T.K. Waters wasn't there participating in the debate, but given the number of times that his name was invoked.
The sheriff.
By the sheriff, yeah. yeah. But, yeah, I mean, again, like you say, Daniel's talking about crime. That's great. And it seems to be somebody must have been in the street, because that poll, that issue has risen. That's the cream issue that's risen to the top here. But I think when I came away from that debate asking myself, okay, who's got the higher ceiling here? Because let's face it, both are qualified to be the mayor, I believe. But who's got the higher ceiling as far as potential development in the office? And I think that's the question that voters should ask themselves when they go to. They go to vote and they touch the screen.
5492937. Claire Heddles, you were covering that debate. Both candidates got hearty cheers, different parts of the audience. And certainly voters are asking questions about their priorities. And as Jack said, they do want specifics about how the money's going to be spent, how their taxpayer dollars will be allocated, whether it comes to police or even JEA, that whole specter rising again. And the Jaguars, how they'll deal with the NFL.
And I'll quickly pitch, if you missed the debate, on jackstoday.org/vote. We have kind of a recap of what they said about each of these topics, a range of topics, kind of a condensed transcript of everything that went on. You can read that at jackstoday.org/vote. But kind of my general takeaway was Davis really focused outside of Jacksonville. He promised that Jacksonville wouldn't become like Chicago or San Francisco under his leadership. He talked about bringing in talent. He called Jacksonville the future fintech capital of the world. So he really focused on bringing the outside in and keeping Jacksonville from becoming these other cities. That was a consistent refrain throughout the debate. Whereas it felt like Donna really focused more inward. She was talking about building up small businesses, this infrastructure plan, neglected communities. You know, they really did pitch different visions for Jacksonville. He's talking about bringing in new talent. She's talking about raising up the community that's here.
That's an interesting distinction. Shelton Hull, what were your impressions?
Well, it was fine. You know, I think that both candidates made a good showing for themselves. I don't think either really went too far outside the box. No one did anything, I think, that would make people excited that weren't there watching it already. Mm-hmm. One takeaway I get from it, which I get time and again from elections on the local, state, and national level, is I wish we could find a way to legally mandate more debates within the political process. I think both candidates and the voters in general would greatly benefit from a more intensive process, a process that could somehow get away from sound bites and talking points. And I'd like to see the two candidates really go at it, you know, one-on-one, even without a moderator, just for an hour, to see who can commandeer that space. So ultimately, you know, 75% of the voters didn't vote in the primary. And, you know, for step one is seeing if we can get this thing above 30%, you know, and if we can do that, then maybe we'll get some fun results. But
5492937, Nate Monroe, you know, Duval County Supervisor of Elections Mike Hogan said recently on this program he does expect turnout in this runoff to top 30%. Still, that is a pitiful minority of voters who will be choosing this city's next mayor. So for both of these candidates, it all now comes down to field. Who is going to have the better get out the vote operation? That is what it's all about now in these final weeks.
Yeah, so much about the way that we discuss and analyze campaigns is it tends to be premised on this idea that these candidates are playing a persuasion game, and they're not. This really is just a matter of whether Donna Deegan can get some of the lower propensity voters who make up, you know, a disproportionate share of the Democratic base to get out to the polls. If she can do that, if she can raise the turnout margin in some of the lower turnout precincts in like North and Northwest Jacksonville, she will win the race. If she cannot do that, then she will not win the race. That's the question. And so, you know, things like debates are valuable. As Shelton said, I think we actually should have more of these. But, you know, these are not things that, you know, tend to persuade lots and lots of people. This is very much this is just like a base election. And that's how almost all elections are now.
It's so true. And partisanship is a big factor. That said, Jack Webb, the Republican primary in March was very bitter and contentious. And some of the Republicans that voted for Leanna Cumber or Al Ferraro, both on the city council, will they stay home or will they come out and vote for Davis, or will some of them vote for Deegan?
I think it's a mixed bag. I think, interestingly enough, about Al Ferraro, though, what I read was that his support that he got was not necessarily from these red meat conservative Republicans. It was more community people. Again, they were concerned about overdevelopment in the community. Seems to me that those people would probably kind of swing more towards Donna Deegan. Again, more community focus, local issues. We don't want to fight culture wars. We don't care about San Francisco. We're concerned about what's going on here. I want to make one point, though, and I think Nate nailed it. I think it's going to come down to voter turnout. And I wonder if Daniel's comments on the Confederate monuments, that is the use of public dollars to remove them, is a waste of taxpayer dollars. I wonder if that might be the precipitating or maybe a huge event in this election to drive those voters that Nate mentions and sway the and shift the election.
African American voters.
That's exactly right.
And, you know, that's been an issue off and on for a long time. Of course, there's legislation that would make it illegal to take those monuments down, state legislation. But let us know how you feel, everybody. Give us a call, 549-2937. Even if you don't live in Duval County, Daryl in St. Augustine does not. Hi, Daryl. Good morning. You're on the air. Go ahead and turn your phone down or your radio down and go ahead.
It seems pretty simple that it's a choice between hate and hope.
That's how you see it?
Hello?
That's how you see it?
Hello?
Yeah, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Yeah, it seems like it's a choice between hate and hope.
That's Daryl in St. Augustine.
Very succinct.
Okay, so that's one man's opinion. Let me ask you, if I could, Claire Heddles, you know, when you talk to the supporters of each candidate, they very much are, as Jack said, in their partisan silos. But fixing potholes, funding the police, dealing with city issues, that's not necessarily a partisan function. There is that sentiment among a lot of voters out there that these races shouldn't be partisan, that whether it's school board, city council, or even for mayor. The late Tommy Hazuri was known for saying that there isn't a Democratic pothole or a Republican pothole. There's just a pothole. Is that era over, though? Is that era over?
Well, I mean, I think the Florida legislature is going in the other direction, proposing making school board races
partisan.
And, you know, speaking of partisanship, I thought it was interesting. Davis kept pointing to T.K. Waters, who was in the audience, and aligning himself really closely with T.K. Waters. I think, you know, because he did well in his election last November, I think T.K. Waters, Davis mentioned the sheriff's name at least 5 times, maybe 10, but he didn't mention his endorsement from DeSantis at all, I think, because, you know, the infighting we're seeing in the Republican,
Party.
That's
such an important point. Yeah, you're right about
it. Trump-DeSantis split. Yeah. He has that endorsement from the governor, but unlike the candidates we were seeing last fall who were celebrating their endorsements really publicly from DeSantis, he didn't mention it once last night.
Jerry in St. Augustine. Hi, Jerry.
Hi. Thank you. I watched the debate last night because I'm actually considering moving to Jacksonville because of the culture of museum and restaurants and all that. I think that Donna did a really, really wonderful job because she actually talked about things. You know, she had specifics and she expressed her knowledge of a number of topics, I guess. So that's basically what I wanted to say.
All right. Thanks for that. Mark in Murray Hill. Hi, Mark.
I guess I'm a little frustrated. I didn't see the debate, which I didn't even know it was on. So that just goes to show how disconnected I can be sometimes. But one thing I do know about is climate change. You know, all this, the ice is melting in the Arctic and in Greenland and so on. And I'm curious, was this an issue at all? As a voter, I'm very frustrated because I don't feel like there's any clear differences between these two. There's just these little sort of mamby-pamby differences. You know, they just built about 30 houses near my neighborhood over here. Not one solar panel on these houses. You know, do you think either one of these candidates is ever going to mandate, you know, that building codes include, you know, solar panels, for instance, and things like that? What was your read on their stance on climate change?
All right, Mark. You know, based on what I know of these two individuals, you would most likely see Deegan taking a more proactive stance on sustainability issues than Davis. I think that is pretty apparent. Now, that said, any positions Deegan would take as mayor would have to make their way through a city council that might be hostile to being more aggressive on sustainability and climate mitigation. Even though the city has finally hired a chief resiliency officer and is looking at some of these issues. But when you talk about fixing infrastructure and improving infrastructure, you really can't separate that from climate and sustainability problems. And she has campaigned aggressively on that. Davis talked about improving infrastructure too. But to your point about climate, I think it's fair to say that Deegan would lead more on climate. And I'm happy to interview Daniel Davis about that or Deegan. They both have open invitations to come back on this program before the election. Shelton.
Yeah, I think I agree with you on all that. I think as far as the polarization of today's politics, it's going to be like that for a long time. The caller mentioned something about solar panels. I do want to mention that Hillary Clinton had a plan back in 2016 to install solar panels on government buildings, and we see where that got her. So you don't expect to hear too much about that anytime soon. Things are very polarized, even, you know, not just school board races, but student body elections. Over at UNF, they just had a whole, it was a mess, their most recent round of local elections, gerrymandering and all that kind of stuff. I think that both of these candidates are great at articulating the needs of their base and the interests of their base.
Mm-hmm.
But the question is, what happens with the guaranteed chaos that the next 4 years will entail, not just locally, but state-wise, nationally? We've got a national election coming up next year, which will have direct implications on our fortunes here in Jacksonville. So I worry that the next mayor, whoever the next mayor is, once they're in there a month or two, as soon as we get to the end of the fiscal year and that next budget session comes around, it's going to, you know, people are going to be losing hair. Hair is going to be going gray. People are going to be tearing hair out of their heads. They'll be tearing hair out of each other's heads.
Mark on the west side. Go ahead, Mark.
I watched most of it. I was in and out the other night, last night. But I was a little disappointed that it was as civilized as it was. I mean, with this election needing...
No one was tearing anyone else's hair out, to Shelton's point.
Not yet, but I was a little disappointed in that, you know, everybody's saying we're going to have 25%. Voter turnout. I was sort of hoping that Donald Deegan would, you know, really punch up and say, you know, hey, if you vote for me, you're for, you know, getting the Confederate monuments out of there, and if you vote for him, you're against black people, or if you vote for him, you're for Trump, you know, something like that. But I didn't see 100% of it, but I wanted a little more punching going on, and, you know, I just didn't see that. A little more passion.
All right, Mark. Lots of passion on our Facebook page. Scott says, Remember the mayor's race against Mike Hogan and Alvin Brown? Just like that race, a fraction of a percentage crossing party lines will be a major factor here. Here is a comment from Lisa. Corruption is on the ballot. The Kent Sturman connections to the GOP apparatus are alarming. Which tees up our next story, by the way, and it's our Friday roundtable, 549-2937. Yes, new and disturbing allegations came out this week about the death by suicide of one of Governor DeSantis's biggest supporters and donors. Local power broker Kent Sturman, who helped DeSantis rise in politics and has had strong connections to Mayor Curry and candidate Daniel Davis, he took his own life last December as he was being investigated by the JSO, where we learned he was allowed to come and go at will with his own badge, and he did that frequently at the sheriff's office. The Daily Mail, a British tabloid, named an employee of the state attorney's office, Chief Investigator Jackson Short, who began working for State Attorney Melissa Nelson just weeks after Sturman's death. In a note to his loved ones, Sturman urged one of them to go find your own Jackson Short. What does that mean? We've asked the state attorney to comment and are waiting to find out the results of their investigation. The Mail also says Sturman died by suicide after offering an underage teen tickets to a Taylor Swift concert in exchange for a photo of her breasts. He then allegedly tried to coerce her into showing them in person. Her father then allegedly confronted Sturman, who offered him a five-figure sum to keep quiet. This is all reporting from the Daily Mail. The father denied or refused that hush money offer. The reporting alleges Sturman shortly thereafter died by suicide. Okay, so it's 549-2937 to
here's the state attorney.
Join us. And here is a comment from the state attorney just coming in. He says, this is David Chapman, communications director at the state attorney's office, Fourth Circuit. The investigation remains ongoing. As to your questions about Chief Investigator Short, he and his family were personal friends with the Sturmans for many years. Short started at the state attorney's office in January after this incident. He has not been involved with the investigation in any way. Given his non-involvement, there is no conflict of interest. Nate Monroe, does that statement fly?
I mean, that is a, that is a detail in this story that if it has any central role in the essential facts, it is not clear to me. And so I don't have any issue with that statement or see any reason to think that it's suspect.
Jack Webb, does the state attorney's office need to more fully provide information about this investigation? They say the investigation is ongoing. Some listeners have asked why the state attorney isn't impaneling a grand jury on this controversy.
Well, that was my very question. Again, something as significant as this, and let's be honest, it dates back not to the current sheriff or Pat Ivey or Mike Williams. It goes back to John Rutherford. And it does implicate Ron DeSantis. It implicates Lenny Curry. Again, Daniel's running for mayor. He had his relationship with him. But with regards to what happened at JSO, I think that, I think the evidence needs to come before the grand jury. There needs to be extensive investigation as to what's going on here. And I'll say this. I think this kind of keys in on what Deegan was talking about last night. We talk about the corruption. Is it corruption or is it just transactional relationships? That is, these are not people who spend time with each other because, you know, they like each other's grandchildren. All right. This is a guy who got access because he was a big donor. That's a transactional relationship. Perhaps it's time, and this is what Don is actually saying. Perhaps it's time that people in positions of authority, elected positions, are more discerning as to these and do a little bit more due diligence prior to engaging, getting involved in these, again, transactional relationships. In the absence of that, that's a judgment issue. That's a fall down on judgment. So I'll just leave it at that.
Charles on the West Side.
Hey.
Hi, Charles.
Oh. Hey, good morning. This is pretty scandalous, but here we go. We have a Republican groomer committing suicide, and, you know, we need to play this to the hilt because, you know, that's what they've been pounding on us Democrats for quite some time.
Well, you know what? We're not here to play anything to the hilt, honestly, but just to report the information. But I appreciate but go ahead, Charles.
You see what I'm saying, though? I mean, they are constantly, you know, this drumbeat of allegations against good, you know, nice people and with all these weird QAnon plots. And here we have local example of out-and-out transactional corruption. And, you know, it does need to be in the news.
All right, Charles, thank you. You know, you have to look at the late Kent Sturman as this critical fulcrum, this nexus between JSO, local Republican leadership, and the governor's office in Tallahassee. He was the linchpin that connected all of these three things together.
Right. I mean, we're not here to name call anyone, and Daily Mail did go into some of the more lewd details, I think, of the investigation into Kent Sturman. More of that will likely come out from the state attorney's office and JSO in the coming weeks. But the bigger picture is really what his involvement in the sheriff's office for so many years meant for, you know, people that live in Jacksonville who were being accused of crimes, being investigated of crimes. How much did this citizen who had extensive access to the building impact those? And, you know, what does his access mean for former Sheriff Williams, who's still mm-hmm. at the Florida Department of Law Enforcement? What kind of breaches do we need to continue looking into? There's a lot of, I think, larger picture issues mm-hmm. beyond just the specific details of the investigation into Kent Sturman's actions with this woman, who I think was a young adult at the time.
Well, she's described as a minor teenage girl.
I don't think so. I think she's 25, at least in allegations that the Daily Mail was reporting.
Okay. Rick and Murray.
Hey, Melissa.
Go ahead, Rick.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Am I on?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I just tuned in, so I don't know exactly what you guys have covered. But the last little bit I heard about the unhealthy relationship between the Republican Party and the Jacksonville police, I assume that this is being replicated in as many Florida cities as they possibly can. But this man apparently had a lot to say about who got hired, who got fired, who got promoted, who got demoted. The other thing is, I don't hear people asking, they're kind of beating around the bush, the fact that there's only two things in the jail: sensitive records and vulnerable people. Now, I'm going to guess the sensitive records were not what Mr. Sturman was after. I suspect it had much more to do with the vulnerable people. I also want to say that
someone who was, you know, what they call a cop groupie. He just enjoyed cosplaying as sort of a faux cop police officer. But go ahead, Rick.
I got to say that in and of itself indicates a little bit of something less than desired health. Mm-hmm. But I believe the Jacksonville police are too involved in this to properly investigate it. I would say send it up to the FDLE, but then, you know,
run by Mike Williams, the former Jacksonville sheriff,
who lied his way through his mayorship.
He was the sheriff, okay, I take your point, Rick. Let's say there is a deeper investigation. Can it be truly independent, I think, is the point he's making.
I don't know if it can be. And again, we don't really know exactly what's being investigated. There, you know, I will say that within 3 days of Mr. Sturman's death, like, what we're learning this week is exactly what people were saying behind the scenes 6 months ago or whenever when this happened. And it raises a bunch of questions. Did some of this activity take place at the sheriff's department while he was using his badge? Who was the father who confronted him over this situation? I think if we ever hear who that is, and of course there's no reason why we should know who that is, but if we ever found out who that person is, then we might be able to understand why Mr. Sturman, like, immediately recognized that he had no one to back him up, and that there is only one way out of his situation. Now, again, there's nothing that he's been accused of so far that would carry any real potential jail penalty, not even maybe like a small civil suit or something. But then you got to figure, if he's getting tickets for a friend, presumably a friend or colleague's daughter, if they're close enough that he's getting Taylor Swift tickets. I mean, you know, the things people, never mind J.A., getting Taylor Swift tickets, that's the real hustle these days. You know, so it would stand to reason that whoever that transactional relationship is, he must have, he's probably, I would assume, guessing, maybe playing a little fast and loose for a while, and he finally ran afoul of someone he could not sweet talk, and that's that.
Bonnie in Mandarin. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi, how are you?
Good, go ahead.
I just want to say that I think that Donna did a great job contrasting herself between Daniel and her platform last night, and that she drove the question home, really the primary question of who can you trust with the tax dollars and who will you trust to make the interest or the decisions in the best interest of Jacksonville and Jacksonville citizens. From my perspective, I would have loved to have seen the moderators ask follow-up questions about Daniel's personal position on removing the monument. And did he write the letter that started the ball rolling on the sale of JEA? I think that they could have dug a little bit deeper on those points.
What letter are you? Also, what letter are you talking about?
Donna made a statement that he sent a letter asking how much could they sell JEA for, and the question was never put to Daniel. Did he send that letter? I'd like to hear from him. Did he or did he not?
I see. I gotcha. Okay. Nate Monroe, who's been leading on the JEA reporting for years now, I wasn't aware of such a letter. But this whole JEA affair, which has become a salient issue again in Jacksonville because legislation in Tallahassee, it was looking like it could potentially open the door for FPL to once again try to make a play to buy JEA. How big of a factor is JEA going to be on voters' minds or not in this election?
I mean, honestly, I don't think it's going to be much of one. Obviously, as someone who has spent a lot of time writing about JEA, I don't say that because I think it's unimportant. I just think that this is like the nature of politics. I think JEA happened a while back, and it's awfully complicated. And a lot of this stuff, to like an actual real life voter, is just going to sound a bit like gibberish.
I think that's probably right. But let us know your thoughts, folks, as we continue to talk about the biggest stories of the week at 549-2937. Lots of education news to talk about, beginning with high school and college students across the state say they're going to walk out of class today to protest the state's rapidly changing education policies. Students at hundreds of schools have signed on to this initiative. They call it Walk Out to Learn. The end goal of the demonstration is to pressure lawmakers to change their policies involving race, sexuality, and gender, and the teaching of controversial topics. Four rallies planned in our area, including one tonight at A. Philip Randolph Heritage Park. That's number one. Claire Goforth, we are seeing students rise up. They're Claire Goforth, Claire Heddles. I'm getting my Claires mixed up. I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
We are seeing students rise up across the state today and tonight. You've been following this.
And before I speak on schools, just a quick clarification, fact-checking myself. I think I said earlier that Daily Mail didn't report it was a minor related to the Kent Sturman case. I think they did report it was a minor.
Yeah, I thought it was too, yeah.
That their reporting was about a minor. We haven't independently verified and reported that yet, but that
right,
is what
right.
the Daily Mail reported, just to clarify. As for the schools, yeah, we're expecting these students to walk out today in Jacksonville, as well as other large cities across the state. And, you know, we have seen some big news out of Duval Schools this week. Just a few days ago, Duval Schools published their new very pared down LGBTQ support guide 18 months after they pulled the former guide. And the results of it were really exactly what the state had wanted. There was some back and forth between the district and state officials. But in the end, the district, you know, made the parameters around supporting LGBTQ students the way that the Department of Education wanted them to look.
Now, these guidelines mean students must use restrooms and lockers according to sex assigned at birth. The guidance also strips out language telling staffers to never disclose a student's gender identity or sexual orientation without their consent. Critics of that change say it opens the door to students being outed to family members or others who might not be accepting of them. Is that a good assessment of it?
And I think those were some of the fears that people were expressing when the parental rights and education law was being debated in the Florida legislature a year ago. Now we're kind of seeing the fruition of what people thought might happen when that law was put into practice. You know, part of it is parental notification and parental involvement in education, which I think people across the political spectrum say is important. But some of these concerns that it opens the door for outing students, for, you know, targeting or not protecting trans students, queer students from bullying and harassment on campus, I think.
Right. And
as protections did disappear.
As the students walk out protesting a lot of these changes, they're also protesting the expansion of the parental rights and education law. It had restricted discussion of sexuality to have none of it in the early grades. That has now been extended from K through 12.
Yeah, it's really cute to be pushing parental rights in a society where like half the children are coming from broken homes these days. I'm all for the walkout. They should walk out. They should be walking out in every city, in every state in this country. Public education's been under siege for years, whether it's safety in the schools, whether it's the COVID protocols, whether it's curriculum, whether it's school books, and now all this just blatant bullying of trans people, which is being done essentially to curry favor with bigots and hate mongers on the national level, because our governor wants to curry favor with Fox News and all this sort of thing. The only, we all, you know, those of us who disagree with it, as adults, like I always say, we as adults have forfeited the right to impose any type of authority on kids today, especially high schoolers. The kids that are in high school right now, the adults of our generation, you know, their parents' generation, whatnot, has failed these children at every single step of the way throughout this entire century. And now they're getting bullied just for being who they are, or just for looking like they might not, like they might be something that someone thinks is a bad thing. And the only, number one, I don't think there's going to be any solution. I think it's going to get worse and worse every legislative session for the next few years. But I think that the best thing that can be done is for the students themselves to take the lead with civil disobedience. They're the only people that will be listened to. They're not listening to the teachers. They're not listening to the parents. And they're not listening to Democrats, who are in the minority in the state house. They're in the minority in the Senate. So there's no legislation that the federal government can push through that's going to protect these kids. And we've still got this legislative session happening in Tallahassee, where more vicious hate-mongering laws are being pushed through probably as we speak. They're probably talking about it in committee right now. And it's a very sad thing. And I hope that, you know, I hope that something can be done before we start to see real serious human consequences to the treatment that these kids are receiving.
I want to ask you, Jack Webb, your thoughts about this legislation, which also has passionate supporters, in particular Republicans who have expressed concern about material in the early grades they felt was inappropriate for kids to see. That has been a big discussion point in these bills. Now, as Shelton pointed out, this generation, Gen Z, is rising up, not just over education matters, but also gun violence and their fear of being gunned down in their classrooms.
Mm-hmm.
That's really, more than any other issue, what has brought out huge demonstrations of young people around the country.
I think what we're looking at here is an emerging groundswell in political change in this country. I think these kids who are probably high school age, they'll be voting. They'll be voting in a couple of years, and they'll vote. They're passionate. They're empowered. I was going to use a P word, but I won't. They're angry. And you know, and it doesn't bode well for the Republicans. I mean, because quite honestly, that's why I think I saw a story in Politico yesterday talking about the fact that Republicans want to limit voting at college campuses because it's too easy for these college students to roll out of their beds, go vote, and go back to their dorms, go back to bed. Wow. And I think the comment was, if we don't restrict voting, if we don't cut down on the college student voting, we don't have a chance. All right. Well, what's that going to look like in 4 years? You got a whole new crop of kids coming in. They're not going to vote Republican. So I think to your point, Shelton, I think we're looking at a groundswell here. Now, I don't necessarily think, though, that this reactionary movement can sustain itself much more, much longer, that, you know, much beyond this term. Because, let's face it, I mean, it was all driven by the governor. The governor is flamed out nationally. And the Republicans, there was another story in Politico yesterday about that. The Republican legislature is getting DeSantis fatigue. It's like, guys, we're here too. We might be part-time, and you might have gerrymandered us so that, you know, we are your rubber stamp. But, you know, we are a co-equal branch of government, so I think it might burn itself out.
If you don't mind me asking, what could the next mayor do to protect these kids? Like a mayor of Jacksonville, when you see these
they
situations.
Don't have any purview over school board issues, education. They don't have that portfolio. That's the school board.
Yeah.
Can they protect the children from being arrested if they walk out?
I'm not a lawyer, but I don't think so.
I don't know. I mean, you can come up with legislation, and you can see if it passes constitutional muster or, you know, it's consistent with state law. Mm-hmm. But if it's not consistent with state law, we've got broad plenary authority as a city council here because of consolidation. And one of the issues I have with past leadership and political leadership, we have not flexed our political muscle in the city of Jacksonville and exercised those plenary rights that we have under our city charter.
That's right.
Nate Monroe.
A big part of being mayor is being a communicator, and the mayor has the ability to communicate to the world what our values as a city are. And, you know, that doesn't physically protect anyone, but it's this kind of validation that would matter. And so, I mean, I think that's like part of that. That's like sort of built into our strong mayor form of government. We have a mayor with a bully pulpit, and that is the kind of thing that mm-hmm. we elect mayors to do. You know, it's a communications job.
Thanks for that. One more education note I wanted to mention. The state, the Florida Department of Education, is alleging that Duval County Public Schools failed to report allegations of sexual harassment by former DA teacher Jeffrey Clayton. Clayton is charged with 2 counts of offenses against students by authority figures, indecent lewd or lascivious touching of certain minors, and unlawful use of a two-way communications device. There is a wide-ranging investigation going on, meanwhile, at DA over Clayton's alleged behavior and other unnamed teachers, which we will continue to follow here on this program. All right. Before we say goodbye, let's go around the horn and see what else our fabulous foursome is looking at this week. Yes, time for the lightning round. Yesterday was 420, Shelton Hull, and I know that's one of your favorite days of the year.
Yes, I still made it here, though, so that's a good thing. The thing I'm looking at this weekend, on Sunday at 3 o'clock, the University of North Florida is celebrating the 90th birthday of Bunky Green, who led the UNF Jazz program for about 20 years and helped put them on the map. It's going to be great. All the teachers, student, past alumni, and you can read more about Bunky Green and the New Folio Weekly, which came out on Wednesday.
Thank you. Claire Heddles.
Well, first, Eid Mubarak to those who celebrate today. And also, I'll pitch again our voter guides, not just for the mayor's race, mm-hmm. but we have voter guides for my colleagues on the property appraiser's race, the city council races, all of those at jackstoday.org/vote.
Yeah, check that out, folks, and brush up on the candidates and the races before you cast your ballot. And thank you for doing all of that work on that at jackstoday.org/vote. Jack Webb.
As I mentioned before we went on the air, something to think about and consider. Last night in the debate, both Donna Deegan and Daniel Davis talked about 2 things. They talked about the Florida-Georgia game, and they talked about the UF campus. Now, question to consider for the candidates, if UF moves a campus here to Jacksonville or expands a campus, will that not create a situation where Jacksonville is no longer a neutral site, and it gives Georgia an opportunity to not execute an extension of the Florida-Georgia contract? Question.
That is a good question, and I think it's one we need to follow up on, and thank you for that. And Nate Monroe.
In the event people didn't get enough about the mayor's race, my colleague Hannah has a really good story about how the two candidates differ on the housing crisis. That's nice and comprehensive, and they should check that out.
Yes, check that out at jacksonville.com. And thank you so much for being here, everyone. Shelton Hull, Claire Heddles, Jack Webb, and Nate Monroe, and have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Also, make sure to catch the Florida Roundup today at noon, where we look at the ongoing feud between the governor and Disney World. And then Saturday at 4 o'clock, Dr. Joe Servin and What's Health Got to Do with It? Everything you need to know about stroke. When we come back, a new kind of business in historic Springfield. We'll speak with the owner of The Farmery right after this. We'll be right back.
This week on Science Friday, no matter what science says, people are still talking about the alpha wolf. We'll talk about what scientists got wrong and how they're trying to correct the record.
It's just a narrative that it just refuses to die because it sort of just exists within our social consciousness.
That's on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
This afternoon at 3, here on WJCT News 89.9.
House Speaker McCarthy lays out his plan to limit the debt.
It limits, it saves, and it grows.
President Biden says he won't have anything to do with a plan that he calls part of the MAGA economic agenda. Also on the roundup, a blockbuster settlement for Dominion makes news, but not much on the Fox News channel. And fake Drake rocks the music world.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. In a few minutes, we hope to tell you about The Farmery. It's a new kind of business in historic Springfield, a farm-to-table bakery and bodega. They're going to cut the ribbon today and open their doors at their newly expanded location at Main and 3rd. Ashante Green, answer your phone. She's the co-owner of The Farmery and Green Legacy Farm. We want to tell you all about it. That's in my neck of the woods, so I'm excited for that opening. It's a new place to go buy farm-to-table food, even flowers. It's going to do its part to address the issue of food deserts in the community with fresh produce and groceries, garden goods even. So all kinds of good stuff. They do have their ribbon cutting today, so something has come up. But that is happening today at 11 a.m. at 3rd and Main in Springfield. Check out the store opening and the ribbon cutting ceremony of The Farmery. All right, David Luckin, our fearless station manager and music director. How are
you? Jumping in here. What shall we talk about? Let's talk about gardening. Have you started a garden yet?
You know, here's my deal on gardening. About a year ago, I hired the man in overalls, a.k.a. Nathan Valentine. He brought me his Magic Mix, which is this super-duper soil that,
right,
you know, can leap tall buildings in a single bound and stuff like that. And it worked great. And I planted carrots, onions, and lettuce in the yard.
And the raccoons came.
Yeah, they were so beautiful. And I was just getting ready to have my little harvest. And then I was looking at everything thinking, God, this is going to be the best produce. And I grew it myself. This is so great. And then one night, raccoons got into the yard and ate every last bit of it in Springfield. So even in the middle of the city, the raccoons are going to get your produce. And so what is the solution to that? I'm kind of discouraged. How do you protect? How do you keep the raccoons away?
You have to put chicken wire over that. If it was a raised garden, was it a raised garden in a box? Or in the earth?
It was just in the, it wasn't a raised.
But you could go to Ace Hardware and get some chicken wire and put it over your garden, and that might keep them out. But
maybe.
That is a tough one.
I've got a dog.
So when we got the dog, the raccoons stopped coming around. They were always in my backyard. In the pool one night, I went out and they're taking a bath in the pool.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They're fearless.
It was not good. But once the dog got there, now they're like, no, I'm not going in that yard.
What are you planting? What are you growing?
I ate some great strawberries yesterday. My strawberries are flowering. I've got a nice pineapple growing already. I hope my avocados come back because after the freeze, so much of it burned. And now it's but all new fresh green on my avocado tree. So it's beautiful. So I've got over 20 oranges, too. Oranges are I think some of the plants like the cold because everything seems to have come back so strong this year.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm growing lots of stuff early, and my tomatoes are just starting to turn a little orange.
Nice.
So
David Lutkin's garden, that's a happy place.
Don't give up. That's my zen. With this crazy work we do, Melissa, I turn off the TV and the radio and just go put my hands in the earth.
That's why we do regular segments on that because it is something so many listeners out there say they love and enjoy. Well, hey, David, have you heard about, you probably saw the sign right next door to our building, make plans this weekend to attend the Sandlot.
I think you
Jack's
and I are
going to
go do that
festival.
Now. We're ninja kind of people.
That's right. It's a mix of military boot camp and TV survivor style obstacle courses. 3,000 people coming to Metro Park this weekend. It's also a music festival. It's open to people of all ages and abilities. Spokeswoman Stevan Brown of GoRuck says there will be live music, plenty of fitness activities, and fun.
You've got 17 different obstacles for all levels. We've got a kids obstacle course over here. In center field, we're going to be leading different workouts throughout the day with various fitness brands. But if you want something a little bit more chill, you can come to the yoga class. You can come to the breathing activation class. If you just want to come and hear music, you can do that too.
Have you walked over there?
It's huge.
It's amazing. I was talking to the young lady who's putting it up, and only about 3 or 4 people put that whole thing up.
Wow.
And it's going to be really fun.
Well, this is presented by GoRuck, a local Jack's Beach company. They make backpacks and fitness gear. Go to sandlotjacks.com. That's this weekend downtown at Metro Park, which is being renovated and changed to make way for Shad Khan's developments. But for now, it's still
the
traditional Metro Park. Okay, David, how about this? Celebrate World Migratory Bird Day tomorrow at the Timaquan Preserve. This is a free event.
I heard Michelle read that earlier today. That's going to be a great event. I love watching birds and listening to
bird
all their
watching.
Different songs. Yeah.
They're going to have arts and crafts, the Great Migration Obstacle Course, and Duval Audubon bird hikes. Make sure to wear closed-toe shoes. Birds from around the world make the thousands of acres in the preserve their temporary home during spring migration.
Great place to take pictures. Bring your telephoto lens.
Yeah, and if you've never been to our national park, this is a good time.
It's a nice one, yeah.
Have you ever hiked that Theodore Roosevelt area at the park?
No, but I've been to the Arboretum.
The Arboretum.
I love that. And, of course, Fort Caroline I took my kids to for years, and it's a nice place to take kids.
Yeah, so that's free, folks, although there may be a slight fee to enter the park, but it's a free event from 10 to 2. At the Timaquan Preserve on Fort Caroline Road. And of course, this weekend, always tuned to 89.9 for fun and music.
You know, my favorite new show on our air is Away With Words. Have you heard that at 11 o'clock?
Yeah, I love that one.
It's a great show. If your grandmother or someone had an old phrase, you find out the origins of it. It's a fun show.
It is such a fun show.
And it's a good escape from all the reality that we face every day. So this has been fun, Melissa. Is this how we fill?
That's right.
This is like, okay.
But it's all killer, no filler.
It's all good.
Our own David Lutkin, always good to chat with you.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And again, join me and my co-host Danny Rivero today at noon for the Florida Roundup, a closer look at the governor's escalating feud with Disney World. That is coming up at noon. We'll catch you then. In the meantime, make it a great Friday. And thank you, David, Heather Schatz, Isabella Da Silva, Michelle Corum. And shout out to our theme music composed and performed by Club de Balugas. Drop us a line anytime at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to WJCT News 89.9 Jacksonville. Have a great weekend.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.